Okay, welcome to another episode of the PLM Quick 30, brought to you by Archer Gray. I'm your host, Patrick Sullivan. So I've long awaited the opportunity to sit and record this podcast with this particular individual, who many of you will recognize because I view him as a staple in the PLM community. Aside from having multiple talents and hobbies, he's been a volunteer for many years for the organization FIRST, which, if you haven't heard of FIRST, it's a global robotics community preparing young people for the future. It's a spectacular organization. I suggest you look them up. As well, he's been a volunteer for the PTC user community, which is the sole recognized independent user organization for PTC products since 1989. And being a volunteer is an understatement. He works at PTC User and has been a key driver in their growth and value as an organization for many years. And he's done so by serving as its president for many years as well. And I forgot to mention, he has a job. Dan Glenn is a configuration management extraordinaire in my eyes and works at Solar Turbines as his official title, I see, is product lifecycle management business process specialist. So Dan's graciously accepted this invitation to share his expertise with us today on the topic of configuration management. So Dan, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks, Patrick. That's an awesome introduction. I really appreciate you adding the plug-in for FIRST, too. Always looking to promote that whenever I can. That's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I learned of FIRST actually at a PTC user meeting, and I was just blown away. I was so excited when I first learned about it. So thank you for everything that you've done around that.
Well, thank you.
So I gave a glimpse into your background, but would you mind giving us an introduction and maybe a little background to who Dan is?
Sure. Relevant to the configuration management topic today, I would say it's relevant to look at some of the places I've worked and what's formed, you know, my opinions of it and what's been driving me. I started at when I was in college. I worked summers at in fact, all these companies I worked at are now defunct. I hope that's not a comment on me, but they Hughes Helicopters was an aerospace company that I worked summers with, and that's where I learned drafting and the basics of, you know, configuration management and change management. And then out of college, I worked at Allied Signal Aerospace, which was another aerospace and defense, but also did a lot of commercial. So did Hughes, did a lot of commercial work, and worked there for a long time until they got absorbed by Honeywell. I never wore a Honeywell badge. I jumped over to Solar Turbines, which sells mostly commercial power equipment. And it's an engineer to order, assemble to order product. We sell direct to customers, and we do our own service and, you know, basic life cycle end-to-end stewardship over the equipment. So that's my sort of background as far as it's relevant. That's you know, I've been working in the configuration management area, it seems, very shortly after I was into design. I worked as a manufacturing engineer and those things back in the past, but also as a designer. But you quickly realize that it's in the configuration management, and then especially dealing with CAD data and the CAD data management side of things, that's where stuff really happens and where the value really gets made, as far as, you know, pushing a digital thread forward and making it all make sense without putting a management and order around it. The data really doesn't get useful until you can do that.
So how long have you been at Solar Turbine?
I think 23 years.
Wow.
And I was 11 at Allied Signal. So that's 32 since I graduated college.
So I'm curious, did you pursue configuration management? Did you fall into it? Like, how does that happen?
Yeah, I think falling in would best describe it. I don't think anyone gets out of college with a mechanical engineering degree and says, "Ooh, I want to be a configuration manager," you know. And I would say my job is adjunct to that. I'm actually I work in a group called Growth Enabling Systems, and we manage and implement the enterprise systems for the company. I'm not working in a configuration management group. There's a lot of great people in the company who do that work specifically. But of course, all the processes that we manage are all aimed at configuration management and change management within the company.
I'm sure a lot of people would love to work in a group called Growth Enablement as well.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's unique. It sits in between IT and the business. And like I said, we run the enterprise systems of the company. So ERP, PLM, and those type of stuff.
So one of the things that it flowed out of your mouth, you said digital thread. But you've been doing configuration management type work for a long time. So what did you used to call it before it's been coined as digital thread?
I think we started with, I've grown up through, I was on the board at Hughes and at Allied Signal, and we got computer aided drafting, and I would just call it that, computer aided drafting. I wouldn't even put the design in there. But when we first saw, and for me, it was Pro Engineer, like around Rev 9, we got introduced to that. And as soon as you start poking in there and you throw that stuff on the wall, you say, oh, this is entire digital communication. I think it started being called drawingless. We wanted this idea of, oh, I didn't need a drawing anymore. I could work off the model. And that was, I think, and digital thread is just the last several years of what they're calling it. But I think we've been working on it since, you know, early, mid-90s, maybe. The same vision that you don't need to read something. You can communicate it directly to a machine or somehow publish it from a safe source. And that data is continuous through the, well, call it the value chain, for lack of another, buzzword, but that's the way it gets communicated and how you can link those together and make the data flow.
Did you say drawing less?
Drawingless, yeah. Without engineering drawings. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I knew as soon as I started working Pro Engineer, I'm never projecting a view again. That was an awesome day when I realized I didn't have to ever do that again.
So I'm gonna claim some ignorance here, okay? I've learned throughout the years to appreciate configuration management, but I know you have a unique view of it. So, you know, for the benefit of everybody listening, can you please tell me if there is a difference between configuration management and change management, and then explain to us, if there is a difference, what it is and how you view it?
Right. And I think I've even matured since we talked last. So I went out and go, why is everybody asking this question? Because I think we deal with a certain set of preconceptions where I work and at places I have worked. And then the greater industry deals with different questions. And each listener probably has their own situation at their own company. So I would say that the traditional definition, if you were to go Google configuration management versus change management, they're going to tell you that you will walk away with the definition that configuration management is managing your products and your deliverables as they go to your customer and how you replace parts and what the capabilities of that product are. And change management is the process in which you change that item. And it's all the, how do I request a change? How do I approve a change? How do I make sure that change was implemented? How do I audit what I did? That's the change management side of things. And configuration management deals with the actual options and changing of specs and performance and those side of things. And I think that's the traditional thing. I think within our walls, we probably argue that we call the part manipulation change management and the product manipulation configuration management. And we have a strong discussion around trying to understand that those are all configuration management. If you don't have good processes around managing your parts and how they progress, then you're not going to have a good management system around how your products change and progress and how interchangeable they are. And straightening that out and getting the visibility to that is kind of our major internal campaign, which is why we had a discussion about how change and configuration are kind of the same. That's really probably more of an internal discussion. Because I think the difference is the difference in the industry definition is correct, that the two processes need to work together and one manages the other.
First of all, thanks for, you know, kind of explaining your viewpoint on how they differ. But, you know, if configuration management is around the process of managing parts, it's also a bit more comprehensive in the realm of the term lifecycle, right? It expands across work disciplines. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're trying to form that thread through all the different disciplines that need to work together in order to understand how a product is going to evolve.
And so when we're just, again, for the benefit of anybody trying to decipher what we're saying, when we say work streams, we're saying sales, marketing, finance, procurement, right? We're going across the organization.
Engineering, service. Yeah, we go way past production on our products. We have 30-year, 40-year, well, I got to the company, 20 years ago, and we said, well, our products sit in the field for 20 or 30 years. And 20 years later, now we're saying 40 and 50 years. They just keep going. So I think that changed up. But anyway, it's a long time product that's out there, and we have to maintain, our connection to those products.
So it's still on the, well, first of all, it's amazing that the lifespan continues for your guys' situation specifically, but in general, when we're talking about configuration management, why would you say it's important? I mean, it's one thing to say that we're trying to standardize a process across these different work streams and disciplines within an organization, but, if everybody's kind of doing their own job related to their own discipline, shouldn't there kind of be a smooth transition of from one folks' obligations to the next?
It all depends on the type of company. Where we have high expectations for ourselves because we are all connected. But if you're not all connected, then somebody is probably telling you you need to be more connected, and you get more dictated to on your configuration management policy. So I'm familiar with friends who are in medical, and I've been in aerospace and defense, where you are told how to configuration manage your stuff. And because it has to move from outside your organization to somebody else's organization, completely different companies, completely different disconnected services handle design versus manufacturing versus service versus procurement versus whatever. We're all under the same roof. So you get a lot of survival processes. We just have to do it. So it happens. And now we're coming along saying, well, we need to digitize this. We need connected products. We need to become more efficient at this if we want to stay in the game. So we're, working from, you can imagine, from paper to spreadsheets to enterprise systems to do this. And as we move more and more toward a digital thread, it becomes more and more, well, how does the software company envision this working? Because that's not how we saw it working. So what's the difference? Why are we doing it this way? And is it better? Is it not? Do I actually have a competitive advantage doing it my way? And struggling with those questions, what's more efficient and what's better?
So you bring up conversations with the different industries, like, if you don't do it yourself, then you're going to be told how to do it. So you brought up A&D and med device with, just being in regulated environments.
Yes.
So in conjunction to that, you also said just an appetite to constantly evolve and be better. So how do you establish your own standards of what to strive for? Do you collaborate with other folks? Are there standards out there that you adhere to?
Yeah, of course. We, a lot of us are formally trained in the CM2 processes and have those that kind of education that's out there in industry. I can tell you those are great overviews, but they're not really very specific. When you get back to your desk and you go, okay, well, how did they handle disposition again? How does that work? Yeah, there's not a lot of answers out there. So you got to work all that out for yourselves. But how to benchmark against how are you doing? That's tough. You look at your top level. What does the business need, and how is it measuring itself? And is the product making the quality that it needs? Are you meeting your own quality standards? Are you meeting your own margin and cost standards? Are you meeting your own compliance requirements that the industry is putting on you? How are you doing at that top level, and how does that flow down into what needs to change on the product, and how efficiently are you managing those changes, and are you changing those? Are you making headway on those things? So if you're not a heavily regulated industry from a configuration standpoint, it's all about linking everything to a business value. I am doing this because I'm getting some benefit for it somewhere, or my customer is getting benefit for it somewhere.
And so at any given time, how are you either measuring success? I mean, it just sounds like it's a journey. It's not the end of a road, like you fulfilled what you tried, what you're trying to achieve, and now configuration management is established and it's just kind of like a machine that runs. Once you hit a new level of maturity, you're understanding that there's more to be done. So it is what it sounds like. So how do you know that you've reached a new level of maturity where you constantly have to, you know, it sounds like reinvent yourself, enhance what you've already put in place?
That's hard to say because it's just such a gradual uphill all the time. You always have more work out in front of you that you see you need to do than you are getting funding for and allowed to do. There's always something that you haven't done yet. And we are constantly competing with other initiatives within the company for what will give us the most bang for the buck each year. And so it's a trickle of improvement in the configuration area. And I don't think anyone would agree that we're there yet, but we've always got somewhere to go.
And so when you outline those, so is configuration management tied to PLM? So when you go to get funding, I mean, we've had Raytheon on the podcast. They talk about, they spoke about their practices and kind of lessons learned on how to secure funding. And his advice, it was Dave Slater, by the way, his advice was to, you know, he ended up realizing, and it sounds like you guys have similar mindset of what does the business need? What does the organization need? And rather than, hey, this is my job, looking at the problem of what's the organization looking to achieve? How can I serve the organization? And at that point, he said that it was a paradigm shift. He started following the data and not necessarily restrict himself to his roles and responsibilities, which opened up kind of areas where he found ways to tell a compelling story where PLM could benefit the organization, but he had to learn how to tell that story in a way where it wasn't, oh, this tool can, you know, help us be more efficient. He described it more in, here's the problem I'm trying to solve. Here's the funding, here's the benefit, here's the ROI. Oh, and by the way, if you care, it's PLM.
That's absolutely true. That's nirvana. You know, that's the state you're trying to get to. And to tell that story effectively is really tough. And there's some gold to that if you get that kind of push. But yeah, we have various departments and things we work in. We try to look for the individual champions at the ground level because their management listens to those, and then get some management champions on board with this to sort of put things forward that are useful. We try not to do the, hey, there's a new tool. It would be really, really cool if we did this. But sometimes the new tool is the new area. It's just, there's nothing digital in this space. This is a way to get digital. Luckily, digital is an imperative. You know, everybody kind of knows at this point you have to get there. That's the other thing, is the organization is maturing and evolving too. So they've always, all of a sudden, they've got an appetite for something you proposed 5 years ago. So now you're resurrecting all your stuff and getting your energy back and saying, okay, they're ready. Let's do it. I have this thing that you can do that is exactly what you want to do. And so you get those opportunities.
So if you don't mind me asking this question, and it's fine, you can just say, but I don't want to answer that question. When you've been trying to campaign for funding and in this realm of configuration management that we're talking about, which touches, you know, from my standpoint, every aspect of the organization, and kind of relating to this whole funding, when you think back over the last 23 years, when you've been involved with trying to build the story to get funding, what was your most, and whether it's PLM or ERP or whatever system, what was one of your most compelling stories that helped you secure the funding to pursue your initiative?
Unfortunately, it's not my story. I would say one of the biggest turning points I experienced was dragging our the PTC user. I'm going to sound like I'm hawking my organization, but the PTC user conference was close to us one year, and I got my management to go. And there happened to be a company selling, or not selling, but they were demonstrating how they had implemented their systems more out of the box and less customized. At the time, we were on the early days of Windchill. It was a customized system, and we were trying to gather the funding together and the enthusiasm to get out of that and get more out of the box and trust the out of the box and do that sort of thing. And having my management listen to those stories one after another as the company presented, that was the turning point. It was a complete external view of doing it. And I wish it was a more internal success story, but you know, it wasn't one, but that's the one that sticks out in my mind. It was the most dramatic. I mean, they literally came home on that next Monday and said, yeah, let's do it. You know, that kind of thing.
And why was that so compelling? Like, was it just the momentum and the frequency of it and other organizations of similar size, or what was so?
Right. They see another company doing it and saying, oh yeah, well, we should be able to do that. And those stories are very, very powerful. I mean, I don't know if the individuals who prepare those presentations feel that, but it is very powerful once you accomplish something to tell your story and you're helping other folks get over the hump.
So was that pre or post or kind of at the same time when you guys decided to pursue, you know, that whole, well, we had Eric on the podcast as well talking about NPM Link and kind of creating a digital thread from the sales configurator side and to the design side and onto the manufacturing side as well. So
it preceded that. So there's lots of events like this that come into play that are the foundation for you don't know what. You know, it's and another example of that is more on the modeling side than the configuration side, but very early on, you know, we convinced management, you know, in like 90s kind of time, late 90s, that you needed to support all your drawings with models, and you need to make those models as correct as possible. And they need to have some integrity, and they need to be released alongside your drawings. You need to manage it like this. We had no idea. You know, it used to be the joke to put a post-it note on the side of a monitor with a little print symbol on it. Say, oh, you can just print this part. That was a joke, you know? And then all of a sudden, hey, we can print parts, you know, 10 years later. And then these things come to fruition. And now there's a whole other industry and initiative going on based on some of those foundations you laid. And some big faux pas, too. Like, you know, you print a batch of parts and say, hey, well, these are useless. All these features are missing. Oh, we didn't need that feature to support our drawings. Okay, well, now you do.
Yeah.
It's not supporting that drawing anymore. You're making the part off the model.
Are you influencing that? Or you're speaking of what kind of unfolds from this additional functionality that you end up kind of, well, it's not leapfrogging. You end up embracing the technology, and what was a joke is now reality. And new, just as you had mentioned before, new problems kind of surface, and you figure out how mm-hmm. to enhance the way you're addressing them.
Right. Yeah. So there's a constant flow of new thinking and new ideas that you're trying to respond to as you're going, and what you're enabling. And you're enabling parts of it. You're enabling, and other parts you're, you know, trying to catch up.
So, you know, we at Archer Gray, you know, specialize in focusing on PTC's PLM digital thread strategy, helping folks build roadmaps and implement the technology. And one term that's kind of evolved in recent years, obviously, is around SLM, right? Service lifecycle management. Mm-hmm. I know you've been doing it for a long time. Now there's just,
you know, I've been championing it for a long time.
Championing it for a long time. Okay. So PLM versus SLM, do you treat them differently? Or from your perspective, you know, from a configuration management perspective, has it always been all part of the same family? Or do you look at it differently?
It's both. So it's the same foundation. You want one safe source of truth to get your configuration from. And it's a whole other science to baseline a physical product than it is to baseline a virtual design. So it's like water for most companies to say, I'm going back to my A rev of my product to make a B rev or a new product from it. I've got the baseline all set, latest release, blah, 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 and I'm all good. But a physical product that's been in the field for 10 years, what's my baseline? I'm going to go out there and I'm going to, you know, refurbish it or spruce it up with a customer needs something. And so it's a whole other deal to have that real baseline. And there's even a leapfrog of that is I want a digital baseline of that, you know, my digital twin concept. And so I can design what I need back here and then have a ready to drop off improvement. We're nowhere close to it, but, you know, those are the, that's how everybody's thinking. But it's getting that, how does that whole feedback come back and how do we keep up with that? And when third parties operate on the equipment, what do we do then? And so it's different challenges, but same high level concept. I need to baseline, I need to know my interchangeabilities, I need to know my effectivities, I need to know what happened when, and you know, where it's at in its life cycle and how many people have touched it and all that stuff.
So if you were to walk into an organization that hasn't formally addressed configuration management, but it sounds like everybody's doing configuration management, they just may be more or less mature than others if they've paid attention to it, right? So if you were to walk in to just a regular organization, but they wanted a roadmap to implement configuration management in a utopian manner,
mm-hmm.
What advice would you give them?
Where are you failing? You know, where is the problem you're trying to solve and start there? You know, what is it about your business that is lacking? Why do you want to do this? That might be a simplistic answer, but that's the, you know, you have to go for the money first. But if they're just, I don't know if that's your question though. I think it's
well,
like,
well, it is. Well, I mean, that's a great question because oftentimes the hardest questions to answer are the easiest questions to ask. Right? Right. So when you say, where are you failing? Like traditionally, what building blocks would you want to have in place first? Do you need to have a sound engineering change process where you can have a good baseline, like you just had mentioned before?
So if I was a, I'm torn on this one because I'm a very, I believe in building a good foundation and putting the walls up and then putting the roof on. And, you know, so you want the one source of truth in your data, you need your engineering stuff controlled and you need that humming. And, but the organizations have no appetite for laying foundations. They need that roof up as quickly as possible. And so you're going to be building a little pieces of the foundation, little bits of walls and enough to hold up the, and by the roof, I mean the value, you know, the end value to what you're trying to solve. And you'll come back in and do what you can. So you're not going to lay a base for, you know, a wide range of, you'll start with a product or you'll start with a, some swath or sliver of the company where you can make a difference. But like I said, it goes back to what's going to bring you greatest value and what's the minimal amount of foundation work I need to do in order to get to the value add stuff.
That's interesting. Have you seen that be successful?
Well, I've seen the opposite be not successful. You know, you try to do foundation projects for 5 to 10 years and you just can't get anybody to catch on to it. You need to do the little things in the middle that bring value.
I was going to say when you first said those words, but I didn't want to interrupt the train of thought. I'm like, what, this guy is poetic. Everybody likes to build a foundation, but they want the roof ASAP, which is metaphorically, you know, the value. I thought that was great. And you are absolutely right. Everybody's so eager to get to the value as soon as possible, and they're wondering why it takes so long. So their patience level for, you know, building the right foundation, it's not always there. So you've got to figure out how to strike a balance, I guess is the way I'll say it.
Right. And they've been pretty good at doing stuff and saying, okay, now I know I'm asking you to rush the job, but don't do anything that's going to hamstring me. Don't put a wall up that I'm going to take down later. You know, put it up, but do it right. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So they're pretty good at walking that line. And
so do you feel that configuration management is appropriate for any organization that's building a product, manufacturing a product?
The appropriate level of configuration management for a company is appropriate for any company. So, you know, the whole process is so overblown. You know, if you take into consideration everything, you're going to spend money that you don't need to spend. So we talked about, you know, I don't need to apply FDA style regulations on products that don't require it. You know, if nobody's asking for it, then, you know, you really have to ask who it serves. But there is a certain amount of configuration management that would be good in any organization. And I know I work with products in my house that I wish had better configuration management, but.
Hey, I do too. Okay, so I'm going to try to pull some of these things together here and then ask you a question around it. So you shared a quote with me that you said good change management processes are essential to good configuration management. And then I know that you've also thought long and hard about kind of cause and effect of each thing that you touch along the way of implementing a good configuration management philosophy and practice within an organization. So, you know, some of the topics, and they range from, again, we talked about it across disciplines. So there's change and governance and PLM strategy, parts revision, effectivity, disposition, traceability, and many, many others, which you have formalized your own structure and process and opinion around. So what advice do you have for someone in an organization? And I think it's a little different from the question I asked before of what would you say to somebody who wants to implement it. Now, for somebody who wants to improve their configuration management pursuit, is it the same question? Where are you failing, or is it different?
I think it is. I think it all comes down to that, because I'm jaded as to what's going to get approved and what's going to get funded and what you're going to be able to polarize people to work on. It has to be offering that bigger picture value. Now, if you're in a cubicle and you have your own time, like I used to be in charge of the modeling area, and I could sit there at night and I could write my own map keys and shortcuts and my own code and all that. And, you know, that's all great and wonderful. But when it's big and you're, I don't want to be grandiose piloting a ship or anything, but it's the same kind of thing. You need the whole team to pull with you, or it's not going to happen. Then you've got to be a little more judicious about and exacting about what you're going to aim for and what you're going to work on. And that always needs to be pulled from some value case somewhere. It's hard to find an organization that believes in those foundational things that aren't going to pay off right away.
Yeah, right. Have you found any masterful ways of masking it? Where they buy off on the foundational aspect, but that wasn't the selling point.
Not really. I don't have any magic. Sorry. It's all running around trying to find out. It's the OCM, the organizational change management part of it. You know, who are your champions? Who do people listen to? Who are the influencers? And what are good ideas for them? What do they want? What do they want to do? Where do they see improvement? You know, and getting people to talk about what their day-to-day challenges are, and then trying to sum that up to a bigger picture. Well, you know, you wouldn't even have to deal with this if you just had a different revision process, kind of thing.
That's actually great advice on the OCM influencers. And it sounds like you're in a great position where you get to span across the organization, which goes back to, you know, being in the, you know, growth enablement group. At first pass, you say, growth enablement, what does that actually mean? But with that comment of what you said about OCM influencers, making sure you can find the right people and then asking them what they want, understanding how they work, what they're trying to accomplish, and then trying to make their life better, essentially.
Yeah, it's a mission statement and a department name, because we are supposed to enable the growth of the company. So, yeah, how are we doing that? And every day we're, you know, tasked to be focused on that.
Everybody needs a great mantra, and that one's one of the best ones that I've heard in a long time. So I'm curious, Dan, well, first of all, thank you for taking all the time. I know that you're a busy individual, but I appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge and experience with all of us. And as we look to kind of wrap things up, are there any other words of wisdom you'd like to share with the folks listening?
Words of wisdom. Well, I think throughout my career, I have just become increasingly aware of the role of configuration management in realizing all the future visions that we want to attain. You know, nobody gets, you know, I had no idea in college that what configuration management was, and I haven't met anybody yet who went to college and got out and said, wow, I really want to be a configuration manager. But as I progressed, as we looked at how models started to be implemented and then realized immediately that the management of those models was going to be critical in order to be able to use them, rev control, release control, those kinds of things, the basics of configuration management. And then we went to lightweight visualization, and then it hit really hard that all the versions and all the current releases of my engineering data were critical to understand in order to make lightweight visualization meaningful. So product view and the rest of the other types of formats that that you've got out there for that. And that's when it, you know, really came to light that, hey, this has to be worked out, and these processes have to be solid. And then we got into, I think I mentioned 3D printing before. Now that we can print an item, you know, the version of that item that gets presented to manufacturing, again, critical for the success. And now what we're faced with is we're looking at IoT, and we're looking at augmented reality and getting out to the shop floor and our customers with our data and our digital twins. Configuration management just becomes more and more critical as we move forward. We can embed the data, the right data in the CAD system. We can embed the right data in our data management systems, but presenting that out to a customer, figuring out what gets released, how to control that. We're talking about different versions for IP protection versus what gets consumed internally. It all has to be coordinated, and it all becomes a, a critical controlled process of configuration management is what needs to happen in order to realize all these visions that are coming forth today. And that's just in the short span of the 20 years I've been doing this. What's going to happen next? It just seems to be, it always proves to be important, and it always proves to be critical in delivering those visions and being the control of the digital thread.
You've walked the walk and talked the talk, and I'm glad to have been able to witness it for so many years, and I'm very grateful that you've spent the time with us today.
Well, I certainly appreciate the conversation. It's very nice to sit down and talk about it. That's fantastic.
Excellent. Well, thanks again, Dan, and we will look forward to further communication. I appreciate everything.
All right. Well, thank you, Patrick.